This day of realignment madness, media days where everybody is 0-0 and they're excited for the season. Believe everything and nothing. Welcome back into the Gary Sharp Show. Jacob Padilla from Hale Varsity is going to join us here in a little bit. We will also take up something. Scott responded to a question. He went a couple of speakers after Row the Boat went. Was asked by a reporter from Yardbarker, I believe, do you have a slogan for this year? Frost said, I'm not into sloganeering, which I think is a brand new word. Says if he has to come up with slogans to motivate players, he has the wrong players. No fear of failure does not exist anymore, apparently. All right, let's shift. Here is Jacob Padilla from Hale Varsity. Hello, my friend. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing all right. Does John Cook have the wrong players in his program?
You know, you can ask that question, and then you can go ahead and answer that yourself.
I think we'll just leave it there.
Yeah. Well, you know, I get there are some coaches that they don't want to have a slogan, but Nebraska football has had a lot of slogans over the years. If you find them hokey or whatever, that's yours. But there's teams that come up with slogans, and as you mentioned, John Cook every year comes up kind of with a slogan that themes the season. It's your personal preference, but you can't say I'm not into it because No Fear of Failure was something I think in the first year, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, I'm sure there's other things to talk about that will come up during Nebraska's appearance in Indianapolis. Let's start with the end of the NBA season. It was a heck of a run for your team. What do you think at the end of the day happened after game two?
One, Milwaukee made some adjustments defensively, and combination of the Suns' inexperience and maybe a little bit of the injury stuff with Chris Paul. He clearly had trouble handling the ball at times, whatever the hand injury was. They just weren't able to come up with a counter to sustain offense against the way Milwaukee was playing. You couple that with Giannis taking it to another level, and the Suns just didn't have an answer. And disappointing, but not terribly surprising. I mean, the Suns, you look at their core, guys are all 24, Ayton's 22. You have some young guys here playing in their first playoff series, and they had some really great moments, and then they had some kind of valleys in that as well. And unfortunately, they just didn't get enough guys playing well at the same time in Game 6 to extend the series. It's just the I think probably Game 4 is the one that hurts most because they lost that on the stuff that they could control. They played well enough to win that game. They just didn't take care of the little things. We talked about the offensive rebounds, the turnovers leading to fast break points. You clean that stuff up, and the Suns win that, and they're up 3-1 in the series going back to Phoenix. So that was probably the part about the series that is the most frustrating. But overall, this is just an incredible run to see these guys finally kind of get a play on a big stage, get a play in a winning environment, and show what they're capable of.
Do they keep the 36-year-old point guard? He said he's not going to retire. He's got a nice little financial package. He's also seen now young players and what they can do at the highest level. What do you think Chris Paul does? And if he does come back or he doesn't come back, what's the next move for the Suns?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if he wasn't back in Phoenix. I think if he chose Phoenix last year. It's a little bit different this year. He'll be a free agent, whereas the trade had to happen with his big contract. So I guess you could say well, now he's got a choice of more realistic options, but he came to Phoenix for a reason. And I think going this far, making it to the finals, kind of shows what this team's capable, even if they're probably not going to get the same path back there again next year. But again, the guys he's playing with are all under 25 years old. So I think I'd be surprised if the Suns didn't work out a way to bring him back, and I think he's probably interested in doing that and continuing to kind of see what these young guys can grow into. And that's going to be the key, is what we saw. They've got some pieces to kind of, they've got to make some decisions on some of their key backups. I don't know that they'll be able to make any massive additions. It's kind of more moves on the margins there. The campaign, Torrey Craig, finding a backup big, or whether or not Jalen Smith is going to be ready to be a rotation player. Those are kind of some of the key questions heading into next year, but outside of Paul. But the key is going to be, can Devin Booker take another step? Can DeAndre Ayton take another step? Can Mikal Bridges take another step? Because those three guys just weren't good enough in game six. All three of them kind of struggled to make the impact that the team needed to. So if those guys, after their first playoff experience, if they learn from this and they come back and they add a little bit to their game, they add a little bit of consistency, then I think you feel good about where the Suns are moving forward.
What do you think we learned about Giannis in the finals that we didn't already know?
I don't know that we didn't know it. It's just people, until people win a championship, a lot of basketball fans just refuse to acknowledge and act like accomplishments don't matter. This is a guy that's two-time MVP, Defensive Player of the Year. He's just been an absolute monster throughout the last several years of his career. But because of some struggles, and the free throw issues for stretches, the jump shooting thing that people always focus on, people kind of, I think we talked about this a little bit earlier on, it's just people kind of focus on the negative once you get to kind of the highest level and look for reasons to kind of knock you down and keep you from that discussion for best player in the game. And I think Giannis just showed that, like, even with his game as it is now, there's still not a lot normal humans can do to stop him. And the Suns, I mean, you look at, they had some different options. They defended him well for stretches, but in game six, there just was nothing they could do. I forgot what the number was, but like an insane amount of his buckets were contested. And he was hitting the fadeaways. He was hitting free throws. So there just wasn't anything the Suns could do to stop him. He's just an absolute force of nature in that game. And that's who he is. He's one of the best players in the league, and he's going to go down as one of the best players we've ever seen.
And he has moments in 4, 5, and 6 of that series that will be shown forever. I think the basketball part, and he still has some things that he has to work on to take that next step in where he's at in the evolution of his game. But I think we got an opportunity to learn more about him, his background, how humble he is, what he means to that city, what he means to that team. I thought that was a door that got opened that people, I mean, I labeled him yesterday, Jacob. You think of the superstars that are the most humble. He's right there in that category with the likes of a Larry Fitzgerald and a Roger Federer and a Dirk Nowitzki, those kind of guys. I think those are the kind of things that as the series went on and the story was told a little bit more, we went, wow, what a story from where he wasn't a basketball player and he was a skinny little kid that came into the NBA to where he is as a grown man, and he's still only 26.
Yeah, and just the personality on top of it. He's just an easy guy to root for. You look at the story and then who he is. I'm happy for him. I'm happy for Milwaukee fans that they're able to accomplish this. It's always cool when you see a guy that's kind of stuck it out, got to the team when it wasn't great, kept getting better, and now able to lead the team to a championship.
You had the opportunity to be part of the media throng that went to the Nebraska Basketball Roundtable the other day. I know you wrote about it. You were very excited to be able to interview players in person. Guys talked about being the changers, history, programs never won an NCAA game. The talent is much better, but there's still some new faces that you got to blend with the old faces. But I found it interesting with even some of the returning guys and the guys that have yet stepped on the floor in Pinnacle Bank Arena, they talked about history and being that team. If the expectation for this upcoming year isn't the big dance, what do you think the expectation now is starting to evolve with this team?
Yeah, I don't know that it's a tournament win or bust type of deal. But this is the year that they have to kind of break through and show they can compete in the Big Ten. Obviously, a lot of extenuating circumstances the last 2 years. Flipped the roster right when he got there in year one and had to make do with what he could. Year two, he had the COVID shutdown and just the bizarre nature of the entire season. So now you have a core group coming back. You've got the best recruiting class in program history adding to that. And you've got some transfers. You've got some freshmen, highly touted guys. And then you got guys that you like, that kind of the leaders of the team coming back. So this is kind of shaping up to, if it's going to happen, this is the year that's going to show that it can. I don't know that Nebraska can go out and win 22 games and get a good seed in the tournament and win the first round game. But looking at this roster, there's still a lot to prove. But for the first time, it feels like, well, they've got some pieces that actually can stack up with what they're going to see in the Big Ten, especially with what some of the teams in the conference lost as well. So you hear it all the time, like we want to be the one that makes history. Mm-hmm. That's not necessarily something that's new or unique about this team, but it does feel like there's maybe a little bit more punch to it, more realistic this year than maybe in some past years.
I feel like we know Bryce McGowan's, and we haven't seen him play, and we've never met him in person, but we feel like we know him. He's active with his brother on the podcast. He's been around in Lincoln for a while. We see videos. We see interviews. Finally, he talked to the media in person. Is he the guy? And he just got elevated in the final rankings. He is a five-star, a bona fide five-star. Is he the guy that is like a transcendent, transitional player that Nebraska has been missing from personality, potential, and then there's the basketball element of it?
Yeah, I think he's certainly that kind of player. The tough part is, all right, how long is he going to be here? Is he one and done? Is he a two and done? Can they make that leap this year and go get that tournament win? If that happens, then absolutely he's going to go down as a major point in Nebraska basketball history. If they just kind of go out and have a decent season, maybe get to the NIT, and he's gone after 1 year, then it's kind of more of a footnote, more of a trivia question, like who's the first five-star out of high school they recruited. But he is an impressive kid, seeing kind of what he's done in his high school career, watching his tape, and then talking to him. Like, I don't know that I've ever heard of an 18-year-old with a vision board in his room that he looks at every morning to kind of get himself ready for the day.
Oh, wait, so stop.
Self-focused on his both short-term and long-term goals.
So expand on that.
That was kind of one of the interesting things to come out of that, that session.
Jacob, expand on that, because you wrote about it, and I was like, and you're right. I mean, this is an 18-year-old kid, and I'm like, what? Just be an 18-year-old kid. What is his vision board? How did he explain it?
Yeah, he just kind of said it's something that he wanted to have as a reminder there to kind of keep himself focusing on the day-to-day and taking care of business here and now, while also keeping the long-term goals in mind and knowing what he's working towards. And he said it's something he kind of started. It's not something he's always done. He said it was a little kind of tough. He had to get used to it at first. He had to keep reminding himself it was just kind of there. And he's like, oh, wait, okay. But he's kind of gotten to the routine now, where that's one of the first things he does when he wakes up in the morning. He looks at the board, kind of gets himself ready for the day, and then goes and attacks whatever he's got on the schedule that day.
Wow, he's an impressive young man who, you know, the expectations, the buzz that when he actually starts playing before they start keeping score are going to be enormous. And if he backs it up, if we see the level that he played in high school, I mean, that's something we're not used to seeing in Pinnacle Bank Arena from the home team. Before we finish with Nebraska football, I would be remiss, because you have a relationship with him as a student, a reporter, an alum. Some of your thoughts on Bruce Rasmussen retiring next month, and maybe a good Raz story that you have.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know that I personally have a great Raz story of being around him, but just kind of, I think, all the everything we're seeing from anybody who was in that athletic department in and around Creighton University kind of just shows what he was to that university, to that athletic department. You've got people from every single sport, coaches, players, coming out in support and sharing what he meant to them. And I think just kind of the level of stability in the athletic department over the years kind of points to just kind of what a special administrator he was, where not only he made great hires, and then he fostered strong relationships with those coaches. We've seen, obviously, Greg McDermott had some opportunities to go elsewhere and decided against it. We saw what happened, heck, with the Creighton's assistant coaching staff this year with Alan Huss deciding, ultimately deciding to stay here. And I don't think that kind of stuff happens without building a strong athletic department where people want to be a part of. And that starts with the people there. And Rass is the one that kind of set the tone for all of that. And door was always open to anybody that wanted to talk to him. And it's not always the case with a lot of people in his position. And Crane's certainly going to miss him. It's going to be a hard task to find someone that can do what he did. But I think he's left the athletic department in a great place for whoever the successor is.
I agree, and I believe that Creighton is moving forward and going to hire a search firm to find their next athletic director. Let's shift to football. Scott just spoke a little bit ago the Nebraska contingent will make their way around. You have boots on the ground in Indianapolis, so we'll get all the coverage and all the audio and video and that kind of stuff. But as we look, and Pat Fitzgerald is speaking now, Brett Bielema is speaking, we look at the West Division, Jacob, and Damon and Michael and I were talking about this earlier in the word trust. Wisconsin has some, they've got some holes coming into this season, but they've reached that level where we just trust Wisconsin will be good. And so much that, hey, they're going to win the West, even though I think Iowa definitely could be a sleeper. Why do you think we just all of a sudden trust Wisconsin, and whatever that element is, how does Nebraska find that to get to a point where people trust Nebraska?
The answer is to win. They've got a strong track record of being there at the top every single year. And last year was kind of an anomaly, but it was also the COVID year, and they were impacted more than a lot of teams. And so I think it's kind of throw that season out and kind of focus on what they've done. And every year they're right there. They're just so consistent. And that's where Nebraska has fallen so short, is they've had stretches of looking like they could be a good team, but they just have not been able to sustain anything. And you see them go up and compete against Iowa. They've played Wisconsin close in some games. But then you go see them lose, get handled by Illinois last year and get blown out by a shorthanded Minnesota team. They just can't find that consistent level where people can count on them. So that's kind of what Wisconsin has proven over the long haul now, over the last 10, 15 years, that you can count on them, even if they aren't going to be the most talented team in the conference every year. They're not going to beat themselves. They're going to go out and they're going to play pretty consistent football. They've got their brand established. They know what they do well, and they go out and do that every single time they step on the field.
Then I come back to the head coach. Like, you feel comfortable with Paul Chryst. You just look at him and go, Paul Chryst is just going to win. You kind of are at the point a little bit with Kirk Ferentz. Iowa's just going to win because Kirk Ferentz is there. Is that also play into a factor? Because I'm asking this question, Jacob, I'm looking at Pat Fitzgerald. Has Pat Fitzgerald and Northwestern gotten to a level of trust in the Big Ten where you go, you know what? Northwestern's just going to win.
The interesting thing here with Wisconsin and Chris is that this kind of success has happened over the course of a few different coaching staffs. They've been able to maintain that level, and Chris has kind of taken that and made it his own and continue to win. I think Pat Fitzgerald, I don't know that he's in the same tier as Wisconsin, but it's kind of more like you know what you're going to get out of them. And again, they're going to be the hard out every single year. They maybe won't have the most talent to win the conference every year like they did last year. But they're going to be tough to deal with. And that's kind of where you do have, where you're capable of having seasons like last year, where you're consistent there. You kind of know what you're about. You go out and do it, and then when things come together, you're able to put together a 6-1 season and win the division. So I don't know that Northwestern quite gets the benefit of the doubt that a Wisconsin does in terms of kind of like conference contender. Mm-hmm. But they're, I think, very rarely do you kind of consider them bottom of the conference or an easy out. They're always going to be tough. It's just a matter of how much talent do they have in that given year. Last year they had some blue chip guys, yeah, and one of them didn't even play, and they were still able to have a good year. So I think they're moving towards that direction more. Just have to see if Fitzgerald can kind of maintain that. Obviously, they, fewest showing on the board right now, fewest amount of returning production in FBS this year. So he's got a lot to prove this year. But again, when you've got a standard established and mm-hmm. you know your identity and your guys kind of fit into that, you can kind of keep things rolling a little bit.
And they've done a good job winning close games, and they've done it primarily because they don't make mistakes, and they've been pretty stout defensively. I'm looking in Indianapolis, and there are two of the three players for Nebraska are older guys on the defensive side of the football. And there's, you don't have to exchange name tags or put, you know, your first name on tape and then put it on the front of your helmet when camp starts, because everybody knows everybody on that side of the ball. You return 9 of 11 starters, your top 8 tacklers. Still a defense that has to make that next jump to be where they want to be in the top 5 in this league. But how long do you think, Jacob, as the offense has some new faces and has some questions to answer and some consistency to grab, how long do you think Nebraska could lean on their defense to carry them this year? The whole year?
Yeah, that's going to be the key, and it's going to be, all right, so these guys were pretty solid. They've got a lot of experience now. How consistent can they be, and can they have a couple of guys that emerge as game changers? And that's kind of the question about this Nebraska defense. Obviously, they've got a lot of guys back that know how to play football, that have been good football players, but they don't have any superstars on that side of the field. Can they find someone that will be kind of a game changer as kind of a disruptive player? We saw last year, JoJo Doman is kind of capable of being that kind of guy, but last year they valued his coverage more than his ability to make plays behind the line of scrimmage. So if that's going to continue, if he's going to be used more as kind of that nickel slot guy, then who is going to be that guy that can be disruptive and take teams out of what they want to do? And that's kind of going to be the key for the defense. Can they dictate terms as opposed to just kind of reacting and being solid? Because if the defense is going to carry them, they can't just be a solid defense. They got to have guys that can go out there and change games with big plays, whether it's a sack fumble, whether it's an interception, whether it's a tackle for loss on short and, or third and short or whatever it is. They need guys that can go out and make plays, not necessarily just make tackles. And that's going to be the key. How many kind of negative plays can they make this year? They made some big progress on third down in the second half of the season, which is a great sign. But they also, the schedule wasn't as tough in the second half of the season. They didn't play as many good offenses. So they're going to have to find those guys that can emerge as kind of all-conference caliber people if they want their defense to carry them.
I agree. You're in Kansas City this weekend, right?
Yes, I am. Last week of the summer. Crazy, it's already here.
Oh, it flew by. And I know there's a lot of stuff to unpack. You and Damon do it on the podcast, and you as well in your column. I appreciate it, Jacob. Have a safe trip south, and we'll talk to you next week and another week closer to the start of, well, for you, volleyball and football.
Yes, sir.
Hey, that's Jacob Padilla from Hale Varsity. Back to the question about how long Nebraska can lean on their defense. And you shouldn't run from it. No, this is a program that is supposed to be fancy-dancy offense. Well, the veteran guys are over on the defense, guys that I think have a lot of pride in their craft, and some guys that came back because they have unfinished business, which is part of the sloganeering campaign. You have other guys that I get the sense from defensive guys, and this was in the spring asking questions. younger guys that look at a Deontay Williams, a Ben Stille, a JoJo Doman, guys that could have moved on that have come back for year five, year six. They've got a family like Deontay Williams has. They don't want to let them down. It's really kind of the first time I've heard that. As the program has gotten a little bit older, is younger guys don't want to let older guys down, especially on that side of the ball. They came back for a reason. They didn't come back to suck. They didn't come back to have the misery of an up-and-down season where you can never grasp consistency and get on a run where you win three, four, five football games in a row. So the younger guys are like, we can't let the older guys down. There's a reason they came back. And those guys that came back, they have a lot of pride in their craft. They know what is out there. They don't want to go out that way. So the defense should be able to put your feet on the ground in day one. I mean, I feel more comfortable going on the road to begin the season with a veteran defense than an offense, with the unknown that whatever Illinois is going to do. But don't overlook Illinois. They got 22 super seniors, and they got Bielema. He'll come up with something. He's not going to roll over on his opening game at Illinois. So Nebraska, there's really no number on how long you should lean on this defense. If this defense can carry the whole year, hell, we were all around in 2009, correct? Now, the Nebraska's offense should be much better than the 09 campaign, and this defense won't be close to that 09, but you get what I'm saying. You lean on them, and it's okay. Embrace it, because there's so many benefits for the offense that the defense is really good. But essentially, for me, it boils down to a couple of things that are familiar for both sides to improve this year and be good. Defensively, there's one stat that I'm going to pay a huge amount of attention to. Yards before contact. How many yards are being gained running the ball before anybody touches them? That's a big number that I'm going to focus on. But the two things that the defense has to be better on is actually the two things that the offense has to be better on. Nebraska on defense has to find a way to get off the field on third down. They cannot let teams 41% of the time convert third down opportunities. When you have a chance to make a money play and get off the field, you must get off the field and force a punt. Flip it to the other side. Nebraska must find a way to stay on the field and convert third down. Oh, it'd be great if you never got to third down. You're getting a first down on first down. You're getting a first down on second down. Well, stay on the field on third down. And then the other part where they directly impact each other, go get the ball and give me the ball back. Force turnovers. Nebraska defensively, get off the field on third down, force more turnovers. Other side offense, don't give the ball away like you're working at Goodwill. Those two things, pretty important. And with Nebraska defensively, you go over the three-year trend, and this is just bottom line, Captain Obvious stuff. When you win, you're getting off the field 70% of the time. When you lose, you're getting off the field 53% of the time. That's a three-year trend for Nebraska. So do those things. You can lean on this defense for a while. And if you have to lean on them the entire season, that's okay if you're winning football games. At some point, the offense is going to have to win you a high-scoring affair where the defense doesn't show up that day, or the defense is against a highfalutin offense that just dominates. But find a way to get off the field on third down, force turnovers, and you can live with this defense for a while. Can the defense live with the part of the defense that coming into this year will be considered its strength? And that is, can the foundation of your defense be your defensive backfield? Long way away from the ball. We've kind of once in a while had these discussions about, can you have a captain that's a defensive back? I mean, he's way in the back. Well, can the foundation of your defense be defensive backs? All right, 11:31. We'll share some quotes that are coming out of Indianapolis. Kevin Warren spoke. He said a lot of words, was kind of vague in his answers. Push things to August, whether it be with COVID protocol or some other questions that he was asked. Didn't have much of a response to the Oklahoma-Texas news. And I think it's okay if he doesn't have a response. We're now in a rush of this realignment madness. All right, what is the Big Ten going to do? Is there anybody in the Big 12 that you would want? Anybody in the Big 12 that you would want? Sometimes expanding is not the right thing. Staying the same and helping the people that are under your roof might be the wiser decision, which I think is the case. But Oklahoma, Texas is dominating day four of media days. It's the tone, along with name, image, likeness, and COVID in Indianapolis. We will tackle it all as we roll till 2. I think I've been saying that Brett Cianci is going to join us at noon.
Yeah.
I thought when he tweeted out, and I thought I read a text from you, that he was on at 1, and Brett is on the East Coast, and he was doing it Eastern time. Brett is hanging with us in the Central time zone today. He will be on at 1. His preview, it is out. It is online. You can go to Pick 6 Previews, purchase it, download it. You won't regret it. Brett will be in at 1 to break it all down. This is the Gary Sharp Show with George on a local music Thursday on 1620 The Zone.